This is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. Researchers all over the world are scrambling to figure out the coronavirus and the disease it causes, COVID-19. One of them is Dr. John Scoggins of the UT Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas. He's part of an international team that's looking into a protein produced by the human immune system that might be able to inhibit COVID-19. Dr. Scoggins is on the line now. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
Let's start off with the basics. How does the novel coronavirus infect someone? How does it work?
Yeah, so this coronavirus is like other coronaviruses that have come before it, including SARS and MERS coronaviruses. And these viruses are transmitted from person to person by respiratory droplets, for example, that come from sneezing or coughing. And then someone may touch a surface that has these droplets, or it may transmit through the air, get into someone's nose, and eventually work its way in to infect the cells in the respiratory tract or the nasal cavity.
Now, your research team is using the words potentially inhibit. What does that mean specifically? How does this protein affect COVID-19?
Right. So this is a protein that we actually uncovered a number of years back. And then some of our collaborators that you mentioned earlier were trying to identify proteins that could inhibit coronaviruses. And so they initially discovered this with a very sort of mild coronavirus that is not particularly interesting medically. And they found out that it was able to really suppress the virus. And so what that means is in cultured cells, if you take cells in a petri dish and this protein is present in the cells, the virus can no longer fuse with the cells. And so if you think about the way these viruses work is, if you think about, say, two soap bubbles on a kitchen surface, right? And they're sort of a few inches apart. As one of those soap bubbles sort of gets near the other soap bubble, the soap will basically merge and fuse into one larger bubble. And that's exactly how the viruses work too. They have a lipid envelope that allows them to fuse with the cells. And so what we've uncovered is that this protein, Ly6E, is able to inhibit the fusion of the virus with the cells in a petri dish.
You say that it also affects SARS and MERS?
Yeah, so basically when we tested this in the cells in the petri dish, we were able to find that the protein inhibits the SARS coronavirus, the MERS coronavirus. And of course, these studies started a number of years ago in basically 2017, and we've been working on it with our collaborators for several years now. And of course, when this outbreak happened and we learned in January that this virus is spreading across China, I quickly asked our collaborators, can you get this virus and test whether or not this protein inhibits it? And they were able to do that. And this is done in Switzerland, actually. And very quickly, they were able to show that the same thing holds true for the COVID-19 virus, that Ly6E is able to inhibit fusion in cells in a petri dish.
Now, you've tested this protein on mice. How far are you from human trials? And can anything be done to speed this up?
Yeah, so the mouse story is sort of interesting. The human and the mouse proteins behave pretty similarly as far as we know. Now, in the mice, we don't have a model system to test this new COVID virus just yet. So there is an analogous coronavirus. It's called the mouse coronavirus, in fact. And it's commonly used in the field to study how coronaviruses infect mice and alter their immune systems. And that virus actually causes a liver disease, a hepatitis, rather than a respiratory disease. And so if you take mice that have the protein and compare them to mice that don't have the protein, without the protein, the mice become very sick. They really can't control the viral infection. And so it remains to be seen whether or not this actually holds out in humans with an active respiratory COVID-19 infection. We don't know the answer to that yet.
How far away are we from trying this on humans, from taking that next step?
Yeah, so this is, that it's an interesting question that I get asked a lot. And so one thing that's important to understand is that these are basically normal proteins that our cells normally make. And we don't really have a good pipeline in place of figuring out how to translate the activity of these proteins into sort of drugs or therapies. We're still really in the infancy of understanding how these proteins work. And so we're talking, basic research. And this is something I think is important for the public to understand, is that basic fundamental discoveries, one, they're very expensive, they're very time consuming, and it takes a long time for these things to translate into therapies. If you take the case of hepatitis C, for instance, the work on that virus really started in the mid-90s, and the drugs weren't actually released by the FDA until 2012. So we're talking 15 years for that virus, right? So unfortunately, this is a years-long process for actual therapies, and I think it's important to temper expectations that these discoveries can be translated in a matter of weeks or months or even a year or two into something therapeutic.
Is it a matter of red tape or financial resources? And have you received any phone calls from government officials on how this process can be sped up?
Yeah, so I think it's all of it, but I think more importantly, it's the fundamental process of basic science discovery. So we have this protein, we know the cells make it, we know the protein can inhibit the infection, but we actually don't know how. And so really the next step in the research is to understand exactly how that process works. How is the fusion of the virus with the cells inhibited? And can we basically commandeer or co-opt that process so that we can develop a therapy, maybe make a drug, maybe make a mimic somehow to recreate that process that our bodies naturally do on its own? And no, I have not been approached by the government about funding for this, but we actually have submitted some grants, and I suspect there will be very soon some available funding for more COVID-19 research.
Now, another thing about this protein is that it seems to boost or help the flu virus. How so?
Right. So this was how we actually initially discovered this protein. This is a number of years ago. That is also not clear to us exactly how that works. And so in cells in culture, basically, the flu virus, if this protein is present, actually infects the cells better. So it's the opposite effect of coronaviruses. But we actually don't think that's going to be a problem in terms of making flu worse, because we think that's actually happening in really important immune cells whose primary job is to actually take up the virus. And so we still have that to test that hypothesis in animals, but we think that at the end of the day, it actually still may protect against flu too, but we still have to show that.
Now, what does this protein normally do in the human body?
That's a very good question. And so the data we have so far is in mice. And what we know is that this protein is involved in many different, really call them cellular processes. For one, we know in mice that it's involved in development of the embryo, of mouse development. So if a mouse does not have this protein, they cannot survive. And in fact, to do our studies, we had to selectively engineer the mice to lack the protein in certain cell types. But if you sort of try to make the mouse so that the whole body doesn't have this protein, the mice can't survive. And so there seems to be an important component for this protein in just development. And then other studies have shown that this protein may be involved in immune signaling. So these are pathways that the immune system uses to carry out different functions. But really, it's not very well characterized, to be honest.
Now, the research into this protein isn't the only arrow in your quiver against COVID-19. UT Southwestern's also analyzing genetic sequences of the disease. How does that help?
Right. And so one thing that can be done with these genetic sequences analysis is especially China was very good at releasing a lot of these sequences early. So this virus, its genome is made up of thousands of nucleic acid base pairs. And if you analyze those sequences, you can start to determine differences between these viruses and, let's say, SARS or MERS. And you can also start to understand whether or not there's differences between the viruses that, say, are in China versus those that are in the United States. And so there are people who are sort of diligently looking at this from a bioinformatic perspective. They're just really going into the computer and saying, what's the difference between the sequences of this virus and those that have come before it? And can we learn anything about how those sequences have changed so that we can try to maybe develop better vaccines or really understand the differences of why this virus may be more infectious, but maybe not as deadly as SARS, for instance.
Now, during your recent trials, has there been anything you've uncovered about coronaviruses in general or COVID-19 specifically that can help combat this pandemic?
Right. Again, these are very early days in the experiments. And, you know, we had been working on this project for a while before this outbreak even happened. And so the minimal data we have right now is that our protein of interest is able to inhibit this COVID-19 virus in cells in a petri dish. And, I hate to say that we're going to basically sort of turn this into some sort of cure, because the reality is we just can't know that right now. And it's just too early.
Dr. John Scoggins is with UT Southwestern Medical Center. We appreciate you taking a break to talk with us.
All right. Thanks, Justin.